Shantad Paramahamsa Parvajakacharya Astatarasati Shri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. Shalom Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvajakacharya Astatarasati Shri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Ki. Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki. Prembhago Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Chandi Shri Advaita Gunadhara Shri Vasa Devora Bhaktivedanta Ki. Shamakun Radhakun Giri Govardhan Ki Chana. All glories assemble devotees. All glories assemble devotees. All glories assemble devotees. So today I wanted to go over a very famous verse. It's up on the board. Do you usually do word for word and all of the and have people recite it? It just depends. Okay. So ninth chapter, Prabhupada says that the first chapter in Bhagavad Gita is kind of an introduction. And the second chapter he calls confidential knowledge, because in that chapter he really makes the distinction between matter and spirit. There's like so many verses that really show that. You know, Dehinasmin Dehinasmin Dehe, and as embodied soul continually passes from boy to youth to old age, so the soul similarly passes into another body at death. And Na Jayate Mriyate Vakadash Chain, for the soul, there's never birth nor death nor having one spin does they ever cease to be. It's undying, eternal, ever existing, primeval. He's not slain when the body is slain. Also, na traveham jatuna samanvatam nemi janadipa, that never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall we ever cease to be. And Prabhupada emphasized this verse because it shows that some philosophies want to say that when you leave your body, that you go into the light, you know, and you kind of become one. But in this verse, it says very definitively that we're always individuals. Prabhupada also makes the point that just like, you know, we're all active, we all want to do things, you know. But when the soul leaves the body, then the body is totally inert, the body is totally inactive. So when the soul leaves the body, it only makes sense that it's going to also be active. There's going to be so many things for it to do. So that's the second chapter. And then the ninth chapter is called the most confidential knowledge. So it's probably the most important chapter in the whole Bhagavad Gita. Of course, there's some other most important chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. But this verse, Rajavijja, Rajaguyan, Pavichamitamutamam, Pratchak Savagamam Damyam Sisukam Kartamavyam. We could say it together a couple of times if anybody wants to chant it. It's always auspicious to chant the Sanskrit. So if you want to just look up here, and if you want to chant, that'd be great. Rajavijja Rajaguyam. Pavichami Tamutamam. Pachak Savagamam Dharmyam. Sisukam Kartamavyayam. One more time. Rajavijja Rajaguyam. Pavichamitamutamam. Prachakshastavagamam Dharmyam. Sisukam Kartamavyayam. Anyone want to try? Rajavijja Rajaguyam. Pavichamitamutamam. Prachakshavagamam Dharmyam. Sisukam Kartamavyayam.
Rajavijja Rajaguyam.
Rajavijja Rajaguyam.
Pavichamitamutamam.
Pavichamitamutamam.
Yakshavagamam Dharmyam.
Prachakshavagamam Dharmyam.
Sisukam Kartamavyayam.
Sisukam Kartamavyayam. Rajavijja Rajaguyam.
Pavitram
idam uttamam. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam.
Sisukam kartum
avyayam. Raj, do you want to chant?
Okay. Rajavijja Rajaguyam.
Avichamidamutamam. Prachakshavagamam dharmyam. Sisukam kartamavyayam. So word for word, Rajavijja, the king of education. Rajaguyam, the king of confidential knowledge. Pavicham, the purest. Idam, this. Uttamam, transcendental. Pratyaksha, by direct experience. Avagamam, understood. Dharmyam, the principle of religion. Sisukam, very happy. Kartum, to execute. Avyayam, everlasting. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. It is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and it is joyfully performed. So it's a long purport. I just thought I'd pick out some important parts since we don't have all that much time. And it begins with, this knowledge is the king of education. So there's so many different kinds of knowledge, political science and then biological science and sociology and physics and chemistry and mathematics and astronomy and engineering and law, so many different departments. But Prabhupada laments that all these universities, but there's not really a university for studying the soul. And that's what's most important. He tells the story of the boatman. Which probably a lot of you know. I'll just go through it quickly, but the boatman is taking a professor across the river, and the professor is espousing all his knowledge. He's explaining calculus to this boatman, and the boatman, he says, after he finishes talking about calculus, says, so, do you understand this? The boatman says, no, I don't understand any of it. But you've wasted 25% of your life. So he goes on and begins to explain about ornithology and just, really gives all the details and says to the boatman, so what do you think? He goes, I don't really understand it. Well, you've wasted 50% of your life. So he goes on like that, and till according to the professor, the boatman's wasted 100% of his life. And then this big storm comes up, and the sky gets dark, lightning starts to strike, and the waves start to get really strong, and the boat starts to go back and forth, and the boatman says to the professor, well, I hope you know how to swim. I think the boat's going to catch, because I don't know how to swim. The boatman says, you've wasted 100% of your life, So that's kind of the situation. Like, there's so much knowledge, so much so-called material advancement. After all the big buildings that are displayed, and all the computer science, and just so much, you know, so much technology. But ultimately, how is that going to help anyone at the time of death? That's the point. So this idea of being the king of education is that it trumps, funny word to use right now, but it trumps all the other systems of knowledge. And that's why it's called the king of education. It's also said that this knowledge is the most secret of all secrets. So that's kind of interesting phrase, the most secret of all secrets. It's also called an open secret. So an open secret means it's something, it's available to everyone. So Srila Prabhupada says, just like rain, you know, it falls on everyone equally. But some, you know, the ground soaks it up, but for the rocks, it just flows off. So mercy from Krishna is always available to everyone. But some people are soaking it up, and some people are preferring just to let it go, just to let it, you know, slide off. So this open secret is the secret of devotional service, you know, the secret of the perfection of life. I thought this is an appropriate story of Ramanujacharya when he's a young man and he has a guru, Yadava Prakash, and his guru gives him a secret mantra. The mantra gives him, Om Namo Narayana. And he tells him, this is a very secret mantra, I don't want you to share it with anyone. If you do share it, you'll definitely go to hell. Anyone who hears this mantra is liberated, so you'll be liberated by chanting this mantra, but don't share it. So Ramanujacharya, he thinks about that, and he thinks very seriously about it, and he decides to go up to one of the highest places in town, and he calls all the townspeople, come, come, I have something very special for you. And when they come, guess what he does? He chants, Om Namo Narayanaya, that this will perfect your life, this will liberate you. So the people are ecstatic. Of course, when his guru hears about it, Yad Prakash, he is furious. And when he encounters him, he's like, you went directly against my instructions. You're going to hell. I told you we're going to hell. Why would you do such a thing? And Ramanujacharya says, well, I thought about it, and I thought, all these people are going to hell. If they hear the mantra, they'll be liberated. And I'll go to hell, but it's okay. I don't mind going to hell if they're all liberated. And Yad Prakash at that point was dumbstruck, you know, but how merciful he was. And he said, actually, you're the guru. You're the real guru. So this is the open secret of devotional service, that it's available to all of us. It's available to everyone in the world. And of course, from what I'm hearing, it, people are more and more open to taking it because material life is becoming so, so stressful. Also, it says in the verse that this knowledge is the purest knowledge. And it's called Pavichon Itam Uttamam. So many different religions, you know, I was brought up Catholic, and I remember in our catechism instruction book, one of the main things it taught was how important it was to know, to love, and to serve God. So that sounds pretty good, but like, how do you know Him? How do you love Him? And how do you serve Him? Like, what do you know? What did I know about God? I didn't know anything about God except that, you know, He was kind of mean. He sent people to hell forever and ever, you know? I knew so little about Him. And how to serve Him? I mean, saying prayers, I did know that. So how to know Him, how to love Him and serve Him. There's so many songs about getting to know you, getting to know all about you. The more you know about, you meet somebody, and you start talking, you learn about their history, you learn what you have in common. So it's the purest knowledge because it gives us knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We know what He likes to do, that He likes to tend to the cows, likes to dance with the gopis. You know, we know what He likes to eat. Rice, dal, halava, puris, pakura, lada, rasakula. So many things He likes to eat, and we're able to offer those things to Him. And how to serve Him. There's unlimited ways that the devotees serve Krishna. So It's the purest knowledge because it gives that essence of Krishna, knowing how to love him, how to serve him. And it gives direct perception of the self through realization. Now this is very interesting because, you know, all of us, I believe, from what I've talked with devotees, when they start to become a devotee, they're in a transitional period of life oftentimes, and they're not satisfied with life. How many people have that experience? That they just weren't satisfied with the way life was going, and they just want to know more. So you meet a devotee, or you get a book, and you know, you learn about the mantra, and you chant it, and you get an experience. It's called yaksha. You get a direct experience of something very, very blissful. And it was interesting because the other day when I was cooking, I usually put on lectures when I'm cooking. So there was a lecture that Bhanu Maharaj was giving about sound. So interesting about, you know, the power of sound and how it works and how sound vibration affects. Probably many of you heard about the experiments they've done with sound and plants. When you play classical music or you chant Sanskrit verses, ragas, that it makes the plants very, very healthy. And on the other hand, when you play rock music or you play heavy metal, the plants start to dwindle, you know, and often die because the sound vibration brings out, you know, the passion and ignorance, you know, whereas in the classical music and the Sanskrit verses, it brings out the mode of goodness. Also, I've done experiments with actually measuring people's brains before and after they chant Sanskrit, and they found that the part of the brain that discriminates and understands, it actually increased the brain matter. So these are all not just done by devotees, these experiments, they're done by regular people, but it shows so much. And I thought this is really interesting that it says in our body there's DNA, chromosomes, and as we get older, oftentimes the DNA, it becomes tangled. And so they did experiments trying to find out what it is that will untangle the DNA. So these are some of the things they found. There's something, little things called telomeres, and they have caps on them. And as you get older, they just start to decay. So it says that when you listen to soft music, it helps the telomeres 2-3%. And when you walk regularly, it also helps them, like 2%. Food in the mode of goodness, sattvic food, like 2-4%, it increases. Tai Chi or yoga can add like another 5%. That group discussions, you know, especially about spiritual matters, that can, like we're doing right here, can also increase it 2-3%. And singing, also 2-3%. But then when they put in kirtan, they found that kirtan, because it has singing, and usually whenever there's kirtan, there's prasadam, there's natural exercise, you're chanting the mantra, you have physical exercise, all those things, it brought up 43%. So I thought it's so amazing that everything that we do, it's not only good for our soul, but it's good for our mind and it's good for our body. That's the beauty of it. So it's the purest knowledge. It gives direct perception of the self. Prabhupada, in this verse, is talking about sins and how, you know, it begins with the seed, sometimes just with the thought. Even though in Kali Yuga we're not responsible for our thoughts, you know, it begins with thinking, feeling, and willing, and then it can go into action. So it starts with the seed, and then it sprouts just like a plant, then it grows, and then it bears fruit, produces flowers, bears fruit. So just like with the sinful activity, you know, we saw in the story of Ajamil, you know, that he saw a couple embracing and it planted a seed in his mind, and as he dwelled on it, the idea grew and grew, he meditated on it, and finally he acted on it and was engaged in so much sinful activity. But there's a beautiful verse in the second chapter. It goes, Yeshan Pointakatam Papam, Jenanam Punya Karmanam, Tegunda Bhajanir Mukta, Bhajantyamam Drita Rata, that those who accumulate pious activities in this life and in the next life, and their sinful activities are completely eradicated, they've given up the dualities of delusion, of illusion, they'll give up and they will engage in my service with determination. So, and he also says that as we engage in devotional service, any sinful activities that we perform, they will automatically disperse. They will disappear. So that's the beauty of devotional service. There's so many beautiful things about devotional service that automatically we become purified. That we, and even like, you take an example like Narada Muni. Narada Muni is a young boy and he's in an ashram because his mother's in the ashram as a maidservant. She's serving the sages, giving out prasad and cleaning up after them. And the little boy sometimes, as little Narada Muni, sometimes helps them and listens to what they're saying, listening to the spiritual discourses. So one day, his mother goes out to milk a cow, and as fate would have it, she was bitten by a snake and she died. So here's Narada Muni, that was his full-fledged affection was placed on his mother. But because he had gone through these stages of devotional service, you know, there's 9 stages of devotional service, so that he had had some association with these great sages, that he began to travel and began to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as he meditated on Krishna, suddenly Krishna appeared before him in all his beauty. And he was ecstatic and he was stunned by it. And, you know, it's really speechless. And then the vision disappeared. And he thought, okay, I'm going to get it back. I'm going to try this, and then I'll do this, and then I'll do that. But he couldn't get it back, and then he heard a voice saying, you won't see me again in this life. But if you follow this process, you will see me again, you know, at the time of death. So, and that's, you know, our Krishna's promise and Srila Prabhupada's promise to us, you know, that we're so lucky we do see Krishna's lifetime. We see the deities every day. And we see Krishna in so many things. Like if you read the 7th chapter, the 10th chapter, we see Krishna in so many things, in the shark and the lion, you know, and in the Ganges River, you know, we see it in the beauty of spring. So many examples of Krishna. I did an offering one year on Prabhupada Chakshu, seen through the eyes of Srila Prabhupada, how he sees everything in relation to Krishna. And this verse also explains it everlasting. So when we perform devotional service, that devotional service, it stays with us throughout eternity, really. You know, it's never lost. Like if we perform 50% devotional service in this lifetime, we have 50% realization, then in our next life, we'll start again at 50%. Or if we make 95%, we have such a little bit. You know, sometimes we may see a situation where a child is born and he may leave his body seemingly prematurely, but perhaps one of those situations where he only had 5% left. And so he just got to go back. So this devotional service is everlasting and is joyfully performed. So the more that we can perform this devotional service joyfully with a full heart of love, the more that we can have a loving relationship with Krishna. Because just like if you're serving someone, you cook the dinner and you're serving it, you're kind of like, you know, you're just like thrown out there because you didn't really want to do it in the first place. How pleasing is it going to be? That's why, you know, if you have a loving mother that's cooking nice prasadam for you every day, it's really helping you materially and it's helping your soul, it's helping you spiritually. So it's joyfully performed. We see with kirtan, that kirtan has spread all over the world, you know, everywhere. And it's so popular. I was watching a YouTube video that Pushkar was showing me with Janavi Harris and how there's such a crowd of people, you know. It was like a mantra fest someplace in Eastern Europe. And everyone had their hands raised, and they're all holding hands. They're all chanting, all with smiles on their faces. So these are, this is Susukam Kartamavyam. This is joyfully performing devotional service. And it's everlasting. It's just everything. So it's so beautiful that we have this opportunity to serve Krishna in this way. I was also, you know, meditating on the Krishna's beauty. I heard this story of a devotee who was having a hard time in devotional service, and he decided that he just had enough, so he left. And he went to Japan. He was involved in some multi-marketing, you know, business. And so he had a client, a Japanese woman, and so he was filling her in on the details of this particular business. And he left. He had a rolled up poster that he just happened to leave there. So when he left, and the woman was like, I wonder what this is. So she took it out and she opened it up. It was a beautiful poster of Gopal Krishna. So she's like, wow. She looked at it and she thought, wow. She said, I don't know what God looks like, but if he looks like God, it seems like this is what he would look like, you know? So she put it up on her wall, and she was a smoker. But she found that as she was smoking in front of the poster, she started to feel like it wasn't respectful. She shouldn't do it. So she gave up her smoking and just really, you know, increasingly meditated on the beautiful picture of Krishna. And then one day she was walking someplace in Tokyo, and some devotees came up to her with some books, and they showed her a picture, and she saw her picture. She's like, who is that? And they said, that's Krishna, that's God. So she was so excited, you know, took a lot of the books. And I forgot to mention that when she called up her boss, you know, the bloop devotee, and told him how she'd found this picture, how much she loved it, he said, do yourself a favor, just roll up and put it away, you know. Don't look at it, you know. It made me think of how there's that verse that says, don't go see the smiling face of Govinda on the banks of Yamuna if you want to be attached to society, friends, and love, because that can be the end of it. So ultimately, she became a devotee. Ultimately, the bloop devotee also came back to devotional service, all from the transcendental beauty of Krishna. I was also meditating on the story of the Brahmana's wives, you know, and how Krishna and Balaram, initially, they went to the Brahmana's wives and asked for some prasadam. And everybody says, no, we're busy doing sacrifices, you know. Please, you know, go. Go play now. And so they left, and then they went to the Brahmana's wives, and the Brahmana's wives right away were like, yes, we're so happy to feed Krishna and Balaram. So in that story, Prabhupada makes the point that you can perform so many sacrifices, you can perform so many austerities, but if you're not developing the love in the heart, Krishna can be right in front of you, and you won't see him. And this is something that this is a meditation, so I thought I'd read it because it's a beautiful meditation. The Brahmana's wives saw Krishna with a blackish complexion wearing a garment that glittered like gold. He wore a nice garland of forest flowers and a peacock feather on his head. He was also painted with minerals found in Vrindavan, and he looked exactly like a dancing actor on the theatrical stage. They saw him resting one hand on the shoulder of his friend, and his other hand he was holding a lotus flower. His ears were decorated with lilies, he wore marks of tilak, and he was smiling charmingly. Krishna entered their hearts through their eyes. So all the different ways that Krishna comes in contact with his devotees, and even when Krishna comes in contact with somebody like Putana, and Putana, her whole object is to kill Krishna, and she gives Krishna her milk with the sole intention of killing him, but the ultimate result of this is that she becomes liberated. In fact, she gets the same liberation as Mother Yashoda. Or when Krishna goes into Mathura, he first meets the washerman. And the washerman has, you know, he cleans people's clothes, he also dyes people's clothes. So he has all this beautiful cloth, you know, and Krishna Balam start looking at it, they're picking it up, and you know, just enjoying it and thinking, you know, what they're going to do with it. And Washerman says, don't touch that cloth, you know, that's not for you, that's for Kamsa. He's going to be really mad if he knows it, that you're thinking about this cloth. You just go away. So Krishna says he can do everything with every, anything with every part of his body. So he takes his hand, boom, he cuts off the washerman's head. And what's the result of that? The washerman gets some kind of liberation from that. But then he goes on and he meets a tailor. In the meantime, they've taken the cloth and they've wrapped it around them. They bring it to the tailor and say, can you make some beautiful clothes? And the tailor's like, for sure, you know, I'll be so happy to make clothes for you. And he makes all these beautiful clothes for Krishna Balaram. You can imagine, so colorful. They've got the flowers over their ears, and it says it's like they're two elephants, you know, kind of walking, you know, walking down the street with these beautiful clothes on. And the washerman, he gets a special kind of liberation. And then he goes, sees the florist, and the florist invites him in, and he gets the most exquisite flowers and makes two beautiful garlands for Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna and Balaram again give him liberation. And the florist said, the only liberation I really want is to be able to always be engaged in your devotional service. Because that's, of course, that's a safe place to be. Because sometimes when you're given a material benediction, it can be a distraction for a devotee. So sometimes we may, you know, Krishna will give us all benediction, but if he knows that a certain benediction is going to distract us, he's so kind that he won't give it to us. If he knows that, well, if I give them too much wealth, they're going to get distracted from my devotional service, he's not going to give it to them. So that's all the florist wanted, was just this devotional service. And we see that throughout the scriptures, even in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime with Kolavecha Sridhar, when he makes the cups from banana leaves, and Lord Chaitanya's joking with him, and finally they struck a deal. I mean, Lord Chaitanya's complaining that Kolavecha Sridhar is charging too much for the banana leaf cups, which is a joke because, you know, they were so little, he was selling for so little. But finally, Lord Chaitanya, he gets some banana leaf cups and he offers him a benediction. And again, Kolavecha Sridhar, he wants nothing but to be engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya. So this is the situation with us. Bhakti mama vijanati yavan yas chasmi tapataha tat tomam tapato nyatva vishite tadanantaram, that one can understand the Supreme Person of God as he is only by devotional service. When one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Personality by such devotion, he can then enter into the kingdom of God. And so we're so fortunate to have the kingdom of God right here. You know, sometimes people say they want to go back to Godhead, or they want to go to heaven. But the fact is, the activities that we're performing now, it's like we're in the spiritual world. And if you don't like those activities, you won't like the spiritual world. So it's kind of a litmus test for ourselves. If we're enjoying the activities of devotional service, if we're enjoying, you know, chanting Hare Krishna and singing and listening to class and hearing Krishna's pastimes, then we're entering the spiritual world. And if we don't like that, it means we still have some work to do in cleaning our heart. So these are some of the points I wanted to focus on. If anybody has... Oh, one other thing. I thought this was like really sweet, that the unalloyed devotion that the gopis had, that when, you know, Krishna has a headache, and the only way that this headache can be cured is if he gets the dust from the lotus feet of the devotees. So first he asks Narada, and Narada goes, no, I'm not going to give it to you, because you go to hell if you give Krishna the dust from your feet. I'm not going to do it. He asked several others, and they also wouldn't do it. But when he asked the gopis, the gopis were sure that'll cure your headache. Of course, we'll give it to you. We don't care about going to hell. all we care about is Krishna's pleasure. And Prabhupada made the comparison with this and with Arjuna and Yudhisthira. He said, Arjuna finally would do anything to please Krishna. He would fight for Krishna. But when Krishna asked Yudhisthira, he asked him to tell a lie to go say to Dronacharya, Ashwatthama is dead. And Yudhisthira didn't want to do it. He goes, what? Tell a lie? He's never told a lie his whole life. And they say that some sectors say that when he told the lie, his feet hit the ground, but he never touched the ground. But actually, the scriptures say that because he hesitated to follow Krishna's instruction, that's when he hit the ground. So Prabhupada says Arjuna was a better devotee than Yudhisthira for that reason. Just like the gopis were better devotees than so many of the sages because they were willing to do anything for Krishna's pleasure. So we're so fortunate. We have so many opportunities for service, especially now. If anybody has any realization or question,
I have a question.
Right.
The telomere DNA, where did you get this analogy?
Is that
authentic? Like the telomere DNA?
Of the DNA. That was from Bhanu Maharaj's lecture on sound. So yes.
He did research?
Yeah, well he either did research or he read the research, but he's very scientific minded, Bhanu Maharaj.
Because the modern science, they say that this telomere actually is a useless part of the body. Even the modern science, I spoke to one professor about it. I said that it could not figure it out. But then there was something about that it actually measured the depth. So if the auspicious or good things comes, actually the telomere DNA structure changes.
Yeah.
So they know, modern science knows, but I never heard this.
Yeah,
devotees are excited sometimes, but I'm just curious whether it's really like research.
Well, but even with the, with sound vibration and, the effect that it has, they've even done experience with water and sound vibration, on water and what it does. So, we can understand that kirtan is coming directly from the spiritual world, the sound vibration. And it purifies everything in its path. Yes.
Hare Krishna Mataji. You said you gave some example on Yudhishthira Maharaj when Krishna asked him to lie, he didn't lie.
Yes.
I didn't get that. Could you repeat?
Okay, sure. Yeah, that in the battle, Dronacharya was destroying the army. So Krishna, his son was named Ashwatthama. So he told Yudhishthira, go tell Dronacharya that Ashwatthama is dead. But there's also an elephant named Ashwatthama. So Yudhisthira he didn't want to do it, but then Krishna's telling him to do it, so he decided to do it. But he goes and he says to Dronacharya, Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. And when Dronacharya heard that, he totally gave up. And so that helped them to win the war. But just like in the story Krishna the Rancher, Krishna never breaks his promise except for his devotees. So he will break his promise. And he's famous for that. There's temples in India that celebrate that aspect of Krishna, that he broke his promise, just like with... He wasn't supposed to take sides in the Battle of Kurukshetra, but he did take sides when he picked up the wheel and then, went to Bhija. Bhija had promised he was going to kill Arjuna, and but Krishna made sure that that didn't happen. So Krishna has a special place in his heart for the devotees, and he's always looking out for their welfare. So, what is that Suvrit Sarvabhutanam that Krishna, he's the best friend. Yeah. Yeah. Did you have a question? Okay. And you also have a question or a comment or realization? Okay. We can...
I have another question.
Yes.
When Potana wants to kill Krishna, mm-hmm. then Krishna gave immediate liberation to Potana, right?
Right.
So is it immediately or...
Is it what?
Is it immediately? Means on the same time?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the word. Is it?
Is it immediately?
Right after death.
Yeah, yeah. Because sometimes they can even see, like a Shishupal or Agasura, they see the soul merging into Krishna's body.
But generally, they have to purify and they have to go to Krishna place, right?
But I guess it's so special to be killed by Krishna.
Yeah, the special can give to everyone, so everyone can go to Krishna place right now. So why it is not happening?
Yeah, so...
But her intention is not good, right? No. Potana intention is not good.
Well, Krishna does not take the very good. She is not
the best. Okay, that's
fine. I mean, take
yeah, Krishna, he only, that's the beauty of it. Krishna really, he only sees the good part of it.
Right, but in the all material world, in this material world, everyone is, means not everyone, some people, everyone, of course, most of them are committing mistakes, right? So, Krishna can give immediate mercy so everyone can go to Goloka. Yeah, everyone is coming to temples. But it's a long process.
Well, the thing is, again, it's all due to desire, you know? Because if you think that you can desire separately from Krishna, Krishna's so kind, he's like, okay, go for it. Try it and see, right? But when someone's materially exhausted, or just like 3/4 living entities, they never left the spiritual world. We're the 1/4 that decided, so we're really in the minority here. You know, the majority are still in the spiritual world. We decided to enjoy separately from Krishna. So when we get tired of that, you know, or when we become tired, frustrated, like we don't see so much pleasure, you know, in this material world, then Krishna's immediately there for us. But it's like sometimes you, like in the Bible it says, don't throw pearls before a swine. In other words, that's one instruction the devotees don't really follow, because I can remember being in Chicago in the airport, and we were giving out Chaitanya Charitamritas, giving out Bhagavatams to people. So we take that risk, you know, of giving people scripture that they may be offensive toward or they may not understand, because Prabhupada said, if they take this book, if they even touch it, if they read, first, if they read one sentence, and it was like, if they read one word, and it was like, if they touch it, their lives are infinitely changed, you know? They will begin the process. And there's so many stories of devotees who had that experience of getting a book, not really wanting it, putting it on their bookshelf, having it sit there for years, and then one day picking it up because the time was right, right? Reading it and becoming devotees. So the mercy is always there, but if we're gonna take it or we don't take it, how fast are we gonna take it? How much do we want it, you know? So kirtan is there, purifying everybody, and Krishna wants everybody to come back home, but if they don't wanna come, just like if you force somebody, you know, if you tied somebody up, they didn't want to come to the temple, you tied them up and you brought them in here. What did Shakespeare say? Someone forced against his will is of the same opinion still. You know, they're not going to be happy. It has to be, Krishna's given us free will, so he can't force people. And you can say, well, why does he do that? But that's Krishna. And this is what he's done, you know. And our whole material sojourn, it's like a second. All of our 8,400,000 births that we've been through many, many times is like a second. So, and when we finally come to realize, it's almost like you're having a dream. You know how you have a terrible dream? Like I had a dream once that my daughter Pritha, I was on a tall building and she fell off of it. And I was like, oh. And I woke up and I was like, I'm so grateful that it was just a dream, you know? So also, this material world, I did. So in this material world, it's just a dream. And one day, we'll actually wake up, we'll be like, oh, that was a terrible, you know, what a terrible place. And I'm so glad to understand Krishna, everything in relation to Krishna. So the more that we see everything in relation to Krishna, that's the pure devotee, like Prabhupada is a pure devotee. You know, it's like a mother who saves her child's baby shoes, you know. Even if the child's grown up, maybe she saved it. She's like, oh, look at the baby shoes of my little baby, you know. So the same way, the pure devotee sees everything in relation to Krishna. Look at this beautiful flower. I'll offer Krishna. Look at the sun. Look at the moon. The eyes of Krishna. You know, look at the ocean. This is where, you know, Advaita Acharya and Lord Chaitanya played. Right? As we read more and more, like when Prabhupada came to Hawaii and saw the surfers in the ocean, he called them sea sufferers, you know? Sea sufferers. Because, and it's true, like I used to trip at Peshawar right next to that beach at the blowhole. And every other day, at least, we'd hear ambulances coming because the waves move in such a way, kind of like, they move like this, so people would, you know, get their back messed up, or their neck, or, you know, it is suffering, you know. So, you know, you try to enjoy. And even when I first got to Hawaii, I tried to enjoy. I went into that part of the ocean, and it was so much fun, you know. I was like out there with the surfers. I was kind of like body surfing. I thought, oh, this is really fun. I could like really get into this. And then I tried to get back in, and I could not. The surf just kept pushing me out farther and farther. And someone had told me, you shouldn't be out here, you shouldn't be out here, but I didn't listen. So by the time I finally did, I kept on getting pushed farther and farther to the rocks. When I finally did get in, I was like so exhausted, and I thought, wow, Krishna's showing me that there's not really an enjoyable thing. Like, anything can happen at any moment, right? I mean, I'm not saying that the ocean's fun. I still like the ocean, but I'm saying that when we see everything in relation to Krishna, that's the most fun. Does that make sense?
Okay. Thank you, Matas.
All right. If there's any other questions or comments, we'll stop here. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Thank you so much.